right, it's 5:14. Sports Radio 96.7, 1310 The Ticket. It's Bob and Corby. It's Friday. We got some Friday fun in about 15 minutes. We've got a little weekend Sturm Center, and then we just continue on with our Friday traditions. But let's do this here. Been meaning to talk to you guys about... So I really got into Free Solo. Love that documentary as a documentary guy.
Oh, I thought you meant like the actual art of Free Solo.
No. I my extreme sports are pretty much watching other people do it. And that's kind of how I roll because I have an innate fear of death. And
I do find that when I watch those things and you talk to it with other people, you give the, yeah, I've seen it. Like it's... Like you're doing
like you accomplished something.
Yeah, bro. I watched that.
And I think I'm in the biggest group out there, which is I kind of like buying, like, outdoor stuff, like North Face or Patagonia
right.
or something.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I like eating Clif Bars. I just don't really live the extreme life.
Right. I spend very little time outside doing anything.
Right.
But
like they market to me, and I know I'm not the only one, but I really don't do extreme things in that.
You just go to your backyard, eat a Clif Bar.
Right, right.
Like, yeah, this is it, man.
Yeah, I put on my jacket and then drive to work. Anyway, so Free Solo really got my attention because I think Alex Honnold is awesome, and the way he climbed El Capitan without any ropes or harnesses or anything.
It's one of the most amazing documentaries ever made. It won best documentary at the Academy Awards. It's unbelievable.
However, as awesome as I think it is, there are apparently ramifications that Real Sports dived into.
And good on them for finding this angle.
Yeah. So extreme climbing has led to a number of extreme climbing deaths.
Shocker.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, first of all, you have to know free soloing is insane in the sense that they're climbing up, let's say, a 2,000-foot cliff. So in the end, that's 200 stories would be my easy conversion chart. And if you fall from anything more than, I don't know, 5 stories, there's a really good chance you're going to die. And, I mean...
And you're not falling on pillows, either. You're falling on rock.
They start to say in the community, and this they'll even get into it here, and I should start playing audio quickly, but they basically say it's not a matter of when you'll die, or if you'll die, it's when you'll die if you do this for a living, or just if it's your primary source of enjoyment, is you want to climb without any sort of safety precautions. I mean, it's...
Even when you are climbing with safety precautions,
yes.
There are accidents.
Oh, yeah. So Tommy Caldwell... So Alex Honnold was not on this, but Tommy Caldwell is kind of his contemporary. They've even done projects together. We'll get into that. But they got him for this piece. Honnold apparently did not... I don't know. He just declined. I'm sure Real Sports wanted him on this piece. But they talked to Tommy Caldwell, and now that's where our audio will begin. Here it is.
When you think about when you broke into this sport, how has the sport evolved from then to where we are today?
There's an industry surrounding it now where you can make a living and still do it full time. It used to be that there's no way to make money climbing, so it was either making money or climbing. Now we're lucky enough to live in an age where you can combine them.
There's just one small catch. To capture the spotlight and all of its spoils, climbers need to stand out from the crowd. And that's pitted them against one another in a growing arms race to see who can complete the most treacherous trip up the mountain. Some are trying to summit peaks long considered too dangerous to attempt and vie to be the first ever to scale them, notching what's known as a first ascent. Others are turning mountains into racetracks, sprinting to the top in the hope of setting world records for speed. The bravest, some say craziest, forgo any safety equipment, even ropes, a daredevil tactic called free soloing. In 2014, Tommy Caldwell and his climbing partner, Kevin Jorgensen, became the first ever to free climb an infamous route in Yosemite Valley.
Amazing, right?
The feat made them celebrities, but could have had a very different ending.
The standards are getting pushed so far right now that, you know, the way that my wife talks about it these days is she's like, we need to have in for when you die.
She doesn't say if, she says when.
I mean, she's like, I've gotten to this point where so many people in our community have died that that's how I have to think about it.
Okay, so that sort of sets the stage for the sponsorship money for extreme climbing is not interested in unless you're being extreme.
Right. They don't want to see you hike up a hill.
Right, and so they only have X number of dollars, and they're going to funnel it all to the guys doing the craziest stuff. And people then say, well, I want to be one of those guys that does crazy stuff. And then, of course, somebody dies. So what caused that? And who's to blame? Or is anybody to blame? And that's kind of the thrust of this story.
They've lost a dozen elite climbers in the last couple of years. And if you'd want to put that at a percentage point compared to, say, the NBA with a percentage of ACL injuries,
yeah,
or in football, the percentage of head injuries and what we talk about, just imagine in football, every game one guy dies. That's the percentages we're dealing with here.
It's very, very troublesome, of course, as you might expect. And by the way, unless we give anybody the impression, Alex Honnold didn't start this. In fact, I think in Free Solo, he's talking about the many friends he's had that have died as well.
Yeah.
This was going on long before that movie won an Oscar. Here's a story of Quinn Brett, this young lady that they talked to, who now is fully paralyzed.
Over the last 3 years, more than a dozen elite-level climbers, including some of the most famous names in the sport, have been catastrophically injured or killed. One by one, they've taken on risks that once would have been unthinkable, hoping to make climbing history, only to have their lives changed in a very different way. For several years, Quinn Brett was one of the best female climbers in the world, but she climbed the old-fashioned way, and that was a problem.
As good a climber as you were, you didn't garner a lot of sponsorship. Was that frustrating to you?
That was frustrating for sure. I'm like, how come I can't seem to be respected by any of the companies?
So Brett decided to up the ante and try her hand at so-called speed climbing. Setting records for speed can make a climber famous and attract sponsors if they make it to the top.
The faster you want to go, the more things you're putting by the wayside and the more the consequences go up.
And you know when you're cutting corners that you're adding risk to the equation?
Yes.
But you dismiss it.
I didn't think about the consequences, and I don't know why I didn't.
On October 11th, 2017, Brett was speed climbing in Yosemite National Park, up a famous route known as the Nose.
I was feeling good. I wasn't making any errors. I wasn't slipping. And I remember my last body position being like my right hand in the crack here. And then I saw granite going before my eyes, and then I woke up. I think I just told my partner Josie that I f***ed up and I couldn't feel my legs.
Brett had fallen 100 feet and slammed into a rocky ledge. She was rushed into emergency surgery, but the damage was already done. Brett was left paralyzed from the waist down.
Yeah, I said fully paralyzed, just from the waist down. Could you imagine? First of all, what are the odds you can survive a 100-foot fall?
To rocks
off the side of a mountain. And make no mistake, these are sheer rock faces that often, man, the angles defy. This is not your hike that you took on your vacation. This is almost all hands and arms usually. Like your legs are simply there to kind of steady you, but you're not really able to put a whole lot of weight on them for quite a while.
It's horrifying, man.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess common sense tells you that this is a good way to die, but
I don't know if you have the audio of her, though, but, you know, you talk to some of these guys with CTE now, and do they have regret? And what was the author's name that was part of 60 Minutes from Tim... The defensive end for the Falcons.
Yeah. Not Tim Ryan.
But he's got no regrets.
Yes, yes.
And he says he would do it all over again.
Right.
Well, that ain't the case here. This girl is so mad at herself for doing this.
Because she was chasing money.
Yeah.
Right.
And chasing the buzz and all of that that this came with. And she's like, what was I doing every day?
Right.
She wakes up and lives with that. Like, what was I doing?
Let me play a little more here. Her friend, I forget Souter's first name, but she actually stopped climbing because of this accident and because another friend fell at the Royal Teutons.
Yeah, he died. He died a couple of months later.
And they talked to his dad, which is heartbreaking, but here's a little bit of that.
After Brett's accident and Tietz's death, Sauter walked away from the climbing arms race, giving up her sponsorship with apparel giant Adidas in exchange for peace of mind.
It was the realization that if it could happen to Niels and it could happen to Quinn, then who was I to think that it wouldn't, that I wouldn't be next?
But Sauter hasn't left the sport quietly. Instead, she's become a harsh critic of her own climbing community, even calling out its biggest stars, like the man who brought ropeless climbing to a Hollywood audience, Alex Honnold, star of the Oscar-winning film Free Solo.
I assume you watched Free Solo.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
If I hadn't driven 40 minutes to get to the movie theater with two other people, I would have left in the middle of it.
Why?
People are influenced by what they see and what they know. And you can say that you don't want to encourage people to do these things, but by making a film that makes it look incredible, you are encouraging people to do these things.
That's where I get a little bit, I'm a little torn with her. Like, she's right. Like, if you don't make this documentary, then people don't want to do it. But I want documentaries made about parts of the world I don't know about, and I don't know if it's necessarily encouraging people to risk their life. Like, there is...
I think she's got a unique perspective, though. That's her world. She lived that world.
I agree, but that world existed before a documentary shared it with the rest of the world. And of course, if you share something with the rest of the world, whether it's the Winaldas... not the Winaldas.
Walendas?
Walendas, yeah. Winalda's a soccer player. the Walendas, though, doing their tightrope thing, I realize they're doing it for money. They're doing it to be famous. They're doing it so they don't have to work in a factory for a living. But it probably is inspiring some kid somewhere to be dumb and to think he can do it, and maybe he's going to hurt himself. So where's the culpability versus entertainment? I don't know.
100%. There is a 10-year-old kid that watched Free Solo that started climbing. He's probably now 12 or whatever, but he will die because of that.
He might.
He will. There is no doubt. That's the horrible problem. But it's going to happen with this sport. It's like Siegfried and Roy. Okay, how many times are you going to put your head in the mouth of a lion before it snaps?
I'm going to start with zero.
Well, yeah, I mean, but a lot of people would never. We would never do what these people are doing. They know the risk associated with it. I see what she's saying, though. This promotes it.
I agree, but without it being promoted, I don't know it exists. And I'm happy that I know that world exists.
I'm happy I know who Alex Honnold is,
right?
Because he is the king of that particular sport.
If we ever got him on the show, I would freak. That'd be awesome to talk to him.
100%.
So why is it bad that I know about him?
Yeah.
Versus, I certainly understand that people are going to see thing in the media,
and
it's going to encourage them to do dumb things. But that's the same thing with driving fast cars.
Exactly.
People
are going to do what people are going to do.
Right.
And, you know, you may get some ideas, but the thing is that gene is already in you.
It is. And I think also these guys, you know, it may look like a death wish, but, I mean, it's a lifestyle. These people are consumed by the thrill, the chase, whatever. I mean,
Honnold didn't have a house for a long time because he just wanted to live in the mountains in a van.
That's why I don't think money is that big of a deal to these people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like surfers. You have to surf. They live to surf. These people live to climb.
Need the 50-year wave, bruh.
Absolutely.
Yeah, bruh.
they interviewed a father who lost not one, but two, his only two sons that were elite climbers.
Isn't that crazy?
That made me sick.
And, you know, the John Franco, the interviewer, was like, He goes, so do you buy the fact that, you know, you can rationalize this by saying they died doing what they loved? And he was like, no.
He goes, that's bullcrap.
No, it's the dumbest way ever to look at something like that.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. Makes you think, and it does at times break your heart. But that was on Real Sports last month.
That whole episode was good.
It really was. You like Trevor Bauer?
I love Trevor Bauer.
We should talk about him sometime real soon. All right, it's 5:29, but let's keep going with the Power Hour, because coming up in 3 minutes, Friday Fun.